conclusions that they thought they were buying something, and what they ended up with was something else. So we developed this presentation that I'm going to run through. It's going to be on the Dropbox for you guys at the end of the week. We encourage you to use this presentation. Modify it again for your market. Talk to our guys in 6 months to make sure that nothing has changed and that we don't have an update. We're going to be presenting this at engineering conferences around the world, again, to try to spread exactly the current information and the state of where we are with ABS 67. So what I'm going to do is this presentation can take anywhere from 30 minutes to 90 minutes, depending upon how much detail you go into. Knowing that you guys all have a pretty good foundation for AES 67, I'm going to go through it fairly quickly, also because Ketil is coming up to give some more practical information in terms of what he's done in the world of AES 67. We want to make sure there's time for him and that we get down to lunch on schedule. So, like I said, we're going to go through this pretty quickly, but the idea is for you to see the tool that we have put together, and the idea is this tool can then be taken by you guys to do conferences and seminars individually in your market. So what we're going to run through here is the refresher course, let's call it. For somebody that doesn't know anything about AES 67, this would be appropriate as well, because you can get into all the details if you choose to make the presentation more like 60 or 90 minutes than 30 minutes. But we start out with a brief history of audio over IP and how we got to AES 67, how we started with LiveWire, how we've grown LiveWire into this huge ecosystem of 80,000 LiveWire devices out in the field, 7,500 consoles out in the field. It's massive. But the roots of AES 67 all stem from the work that we've done in LiveWire, and the idea that in LiveWire we believe that at some point in time every piece of gear was going to have an Ethernet jack. And wouldn't it be great if instead of using analog or AES, we could use this audio over IP? And we've gotten to the point where we've done that. The industry has done that. The world has done that. All these devices have IP jacks on them. LiveWire itself has over 100 partners, few of them in this room. We've seen Jerome's tablet. We'll see Zoltan's box here this afternoon. Some fantastic inventions because of the LiveWire partner network. We've got Ravenna partners. There's a whole bunch of other audio over IP implementations, some of which are more or less compatible with AES 67, but again, it's a wide field, so there was always this need to come together as a standard, and many of these ones that you see on this list aren't actually adhering to any of the AES 67 standard. So they're their own little island that customers need to watch out for as they move through the audio over IP and AES 67 world. So as we look at devices and what we've got, we're very proud of our X-Note. It's the only box in the world that speaks three languages. We speak LiveWire, of course. We speak AES 67, and we speak Ravenna. You can use that functionality to translate between any of those protocols. So we can bring audio in, come out LiveWire, come out AES 67, come out Ravenna, switch Ravenna to LiveWire. It's a fantastic utility box. So don't forget about that kind of hidden aspect of what you get inside of an X-Node. It's always been our goal to have interoperability. It's always been our goal to work towards a common standard. So we were one of the founders of the X192 working group. You guys all know this long history over the last 5 or 6 years where we've taken LiveWire, made it compatible with Ravenna, and then worked on this working group all the way up to what AES 67 is today. 2013, September, AES 67 was ratified, but that didn't end the development process. Then it becomes what's next. How do we take AES 67 as a protocol and make it even more far-reaching. What's the next steps for it? And we've been working on further interoperability, and you see us if you go to trade shows in the Ames booth, in the Media Networking Alliance booth, in the IP interoperability show place. All the things that we do are pushing towards this non-proprietary open standard. And that's very important when you compare us to our competition, because many of our competition like this closed system. If you think about it from a manufacturer standpoint, closed proprietary systems are great for manufacturers, because once they get the customer has to stay, or else it costs a lot of money for them to switch. It's not so good for the customers. So we pushed all the way from the beginning as to making LiveWire as accessible as we can to everybody. The license fees are they don't exist. The sign-up fee is just $500. The idea was that anybody could become a LiveWire developer regardless of their financial capacity. It wasn't going to cost money to do what they needed to do. So as we look at the world of AES 67, it's designed to be this audio over IP standard. It's got deterministic latency, requires a PTP clock sync. It's still multicast with a unicast over SIP option. So those are the definitions that make up AES 67. And what's really interesting is that LiveWire is most of that. So when we look at LiveWire, it's deterministic latency. We didn't, when we invented LiveWire 15 years ago, PTP clocks didn't exist, so we had to develop our own synchronization, and it's multicast, and over time, we developed a unicast mode. So what makes LiveWire different, or in some ways better than AES 67, is the additional stuff that gets packaged. And again, you guys know all this, discovery, web GUIs, routing control protocols. All those things go together to make LiveWire a complete infrastructure protocol. It's really important because our new brand is LiveWire Plus, which essentially says we've taken all the LiveWire bits and we've added in the things that were necessary to make it be AES 67. So, again, we've got the same ideas behind things, and we're able to bring in the PTP clock sync and the SIP stack for unicast, and now we have an AES 67 compliant device. So far, so good, right? Beautiful. As we look at LiveWire Plus, again, it's still more than AES 67, which is where that nice little plus, gotta love the marketing people, that's where the plus comes in. Again, we have the discovery, the routing and control protocol, nothing there really has changed. It just adds in all the extra bits that, again, make a broadcast and control infrastructure possible. So let's talk for a minute about what AES 67 does not do, or it does not give you. First off, there's no AES 67 police, or compliance bureau, or licensing board, or seal of approval. So this is the reason, primarily, that we have so much trouble today, is that I can decide that this box of mints is AES 67, and there's nobody to stop me. And I can run a marketing campaign, and I can have an NAB booth, and I can have a big sign that says AES 67, and it's up to the customer to try to figure out if I'm actually telling the truth or not. So that's a big danger. And unfortunately, we run into this danger in the real world. So we have to be prepared on how we're going to address that and how we're going to answer to our customers about that. So we'll come more on that in a minute. AES 67 also does not mandate discovery. It talks about discovery, and it talks about different ways that you can do discovery, but it does not say you have to do discovery and you have to do it in this single method. So again, that's a problem. As soon as you have choices inside of a standard, it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody can talk to each other anymore. So we have to be aware of how discovery works, and that's one of the next steps that's getting moved forward, a discovery option that may come onto the table very soon, it's not ratified yet, is NMOS, which is a network media I've got the acronym up here on one of these other slides. I forget what it is. There's too many of them to remember. But that's the next generation of discovery and connectivity that allows these different devices to speak together. Multicast becomes important because AES-67 is, of course, multicast. But what we define is you have to use the standard range of multicast addresses. And we're going to discover here in about 5 minutes that not everybody uses the standard range of multicast addresses when they're doing multicast streams. And guess what? As soon as you're not using standard addresses, everything doesn't necessarily work as it was supposed to do. Unicast is a little bit easier. It's a one-to-one. And where unicast has issues is it's very easy if you know everything that the connectivity and the algorithms that you're using or the codecs that you're using. But it's a little bit more difficult if you don't support SIP. So SIP is this session initiation protocol, of course, that allows you to determine the connection between two devices. And if that doesn't exist, a connection becomes not impossible, but much more difficult. And potentially sometimes impossible. Discovery, we all know what that is from all of our work with Livewire, advertisements onto the network that allows a phone book or a directory to be built. One of the interesting things about discovery is you have to be careful on discovery versus on a local area network where you want to be able to see everything versus where you go into a WAN, you can't really do discovery, so you have to, otherwise you wouldn't find everything, so you have to be able to limit your discovery to certain networks or certain devices and build these phone books or directories that allow you specific access to the groups of devices that you're looking for. So the discovery standard, Network Media Open Standards, and SAP and Bonjour are three popular ones. And again, inside of AES-67, there's going to be the potential for any of these to happen. Now, NMOS is not ratified yet, but Greg Shea, who's on the committees and moving things forward, says it's really a matter of time, and this is sort of the standard of choice that people are driving to at the moment. So again, we'll continue to update this presentation as things happen, but this is looking to be the next method of discovery that gets coupled into AES-67 as the preferred discovery method. And as we were talking about discovery on WAN versus LAN, is interesting. It has to be managed carefully. So understanding there's a difference and understanding how discovery might work across a network is key if you start building wide area AES-67 networks. So SIP has been around for a long, long time. SIP's in a number of our products, and it is the way of establishing, it's often used in codecs, the way of establishing a call or a session between one device and another device, negotiating the codecs that are required, the connection between the two devices, and the IP address of the streams that you're going to be using. So it really makes this wide area networking connection much, much easier. And what we found is that this is actually a really hard thing to do inside of hardware products, is implement the SIP stack into the device to be able to support this AES-67 unicast over SIP. And we found that some customers or some companies have cheated, and they have a way of maybe forcing a unicast connection, maybe like we did in the X node, where we've got the unicast mode in an X node, and you get to type in all the bits and pieces. But in AES-67, if you really want to be compliant, you have to have the SIP capability associated with your unicast mode. That's one of the things that, because it's the hardest to do, most AES-67 people that are waving the flag haven't done it. And it's one of the things that customers don't necessarily believe is important at the moment. So it's up to you to get them to look into the future and decide, well, in 1 year's time, in 2 years' time, in 5 years' time, might that feature be important? Nobody thought 5 years ago that we were going to be connecting cities with Livewire because the bandwidth requirements were too high and too rigid. But now that's a reality. So again, don't lock yourself into a system that's not compliant to the standard, or you could be finding yourself in a bit of a problem later on down the road. There's also SDP, which is another negotiation protocol. again, figures out how to establish a session between two devices that may not be made by the same manufacturer. In the world of AES-67, everything has to be synchronous, of course, and in AES-67, it requires a PTP clock. So what we've done in LiveWire, of course, LiveWire has its own packet stamping, and that's what keeps everything synchronous. As we move into the AES-67 world, we have some issues with that. And there are some products that we have no problem supporting the PTP clock. There are other products that don't support it. And that's where the difference of our products that are compliant to the AES standard versus ones that are just compatible because we can share some audio, but we need some external devices to make that happen. So one of the things that's important is that AES-67 does not require a reference to absolute time. It just requires that clock. However, once you go outside your own local network, you probably do want the reference to absolute time because you never know what's happening. Unless you control all the bits of the network, you don't know what's happening at the other side. So we're always recommending at this point in time to putting in a PTP Grandmaster clock if you're going to be using extensive AES-67. So what is PTP? It's an IEEE 1588 standard that gives you this this time sync. It's universal. There's lots of devices that can be set up. We're using most of the time either a Grandstream or a Sonifex device as the PTP master. There are some switches, I forget the names of them at the moment, that also provide PTP masters. What we can do in the AXIA world is if you're just inside of your own network, it is possible to have a X node operate as a PTP master. However, we're not recommending it because the X node doesn't have the reference to absolute time. The X node potentially, if it's the master and you start connecting it to other networks, is going to have some issues. So for the cost of what the Sonifex is and the cost of these other clocks, it really makes sense to put that in. So you'll see some references potentially that says X nodes can serve as this master if they have to. At this point in time, we're advising that a clock is probably a better experience for you and your customers. So keep that in mind because you'll see our messaging start to shift over to more and more importance on having this this clock. I'm going so fast, I'm forgetting to check my slide. So, more on clock sync. The next thing that we're talking about a lot, and you're going to see in our messaging, is this idea of AES-67 compatible versus compliant. And, hang on a second here. So, this is all marketing. That's all this is. And the idea of compatible versus compliant is because there's a whole bunch of companies that put up the banner that says AES-67 spoken here. AES-67 Dante, AES-67 something else. And we started realizing that not everybody is working properly. If you try to take a Yamaha mixer with a Dante card and connect it to an AXIA IQ system and you're trying to make it work over AES-67, you're going to start swearing a lot. You will learn some new words. It doesn't work unless you do a little bit of magic under the table and download a little translation tool and have a computer running in the background. And this idea of, oh, look, we're just going to plug it in and everybody's going to be happy, just it's a dream. So our marketing now has started to try to educate the public that because there's no certification bureau, they have to be aware of what tactics people are using inside of marketing to make sure that their products are doing the things that the AES-67 standard requires.